This is A-State Connections on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves. This is the weekly segment called A-State Connections and Created State, Making Connections That Count. Over the next several podcast episodes, we'll play back numerous student presentations from the Created State Virtual Symposium that took place in April. We'll feature four students in each episode. Today's presentations are from the College of Sciences and Mathematics at Arkansas State University. We'll feature students Clay Hearn, Emily Hendricks, Rebecca Martin, and Sankalpa Chakrabarty. First, we'll start off with Clay Hearn's presentation, which was titled Perceptions of Northeast Arkansas Secondary Mathematics Teachers on the Ability for Students with Disabilities to Succeed in Mathematics, Dr. Lisa Rice, Mentor.
I have personal connections with learning disabilities because I have nieces and nephews that have been diagnosed with dyscalculia and dyslexia, which are learning disabilities that affect learning mathematics and reading, respectively. And research suggests that teachers tend to have lower expectations of students who have learning disabilities in the field of mathematics. And this perception could potentially hinder the success of the student's mathematics education. There is also limited research on teaching mathematics to students with learning disabilities versus teaching them in reading and English. Lowering expectations of students with learning disabilities is often a result of viewing them through the deficit model, which is viewing individuals as their weaknesses rather than their strengths and environment in which they are a part of. And there is also a lack of research that deals with learning disabilities in the field of mathematics, which is going to result in a lack of intervention strategies backed by research that are readily available for math teachers. And however, despite this lack of research, studies show that students with moderate to severe intellectual disabilities are still able to learn mathematics beyond procedural fluency. This means that they're able to achieve a conceptual understanding of the material rather than only knowing how to go through the motions and get an answer. And it should also be noted that special education teachers often don't have the education or training to prepare them to teach math. Along the same lines, math teachers don't have the education or training to prepare them for teaching special education. So this led me to develop two questions that guided this study, and these are: what are math teachers' perceptions of students with learning disabilities? And what are teachers' expectations regarding success in mathematics for students with learning disabilities? So the study serves the purpose of gathering themes regarding learning disabilities in terms of general and math-exclusive learning disabilities and other factors that may hinder learning. It also serves the purpose of gathering themes regarding teachers' expectations of students' ability to succeed in mathematical problem solving. To answer these questions, a survey was developed and sent out to secondary mathematics teachers in this region, and it contains three items. Demographic questions were to gather data on the background of the teachers. Likert scale questions were given to give an indication of how confident the participants feel with teaching students with learning disabilities and their expectations of students with learning disabilities, and open-ended questions, which allows the participant to further explain strategies that they have found to be most effective in teaching students with learning disabilities. This survey revealed that these teachers do have high expectations of students with learning disabilities. However, they don't feel like they've been adequately prepared to teach these students. And it also showed that breaking the lesson into smaller chunks to make them more manageable and less overwhelming is a common strategy that helps these students with learning disabilities. And many schools haven't adopted intervention strategies or a program to help students with learning disabilities to learn mathematics. Based upon the survey responses, these teachers have high expectations of students with learning disabilities, which conflicts with the deficit model, which was a common theme throughout the literature. However, in contrast, in support of the literature, these teachers feel unprepared to teach mathematics to students with learning disabilities. So this shows that professional development and strategies that are backed by research regarding teaching students with learning disabilities need to be provided to math teachers. This would be done so by further researching on learning disabilities exclusive to mathematics. The importance of the study is to raise awareness of gaps in understanding secondary education learning disabilities specific to mathematics, and the need to develop mechanisms to address such inequities in the learning environment, ensuring that students are given the resources that they need to succeed in the classroom. Before concluding, I would like to thank you all for attending my presentation, my thesis committee members, Dr. Lisa Rice, Dr. Amanda Lombardis, and Dr. Farabee Tano for their guidance, Northeast Arkansas Secondary Mathematics teachers for their willingness to participate in the study, and my family and friends for their endless support.
And that was Clay Hearn. Next, we go to Emily Hendricks for her presentation titled Antioxidant Activity of Stilbenoid-Rich Extracts from Peanut Hairy Root Cultures, Dr. Fabricio Medina Bolivar, Mentor.
The reason I chose to study the antioxidant activity of these compounds is because we are exposed to oxidative stressors in everyday life, and these stressors cause free radicals to be formed in our body, which are very unstable molecules. And these free radicals can exhibit lots of cell damage that can manifest in diseases all across the body. Antioxidants actually have the ability to donate an electron to the free radical to neutralize them. Antioxidants can be found in a lot of natural food sources. Stilbenoids are phytoalexins, which are inducible plant defense molecules, and they have been shown to have potential applications in human health. They've also been shown to show extensive antioxidant activity. They can be found in peanuts and grapes. And as you can see here in this picture on the lower left, they are only produced when the plant is under stress. So that yellow mass is the response of the plant producing stilbenoids when attacked by a fungus. Resveratrol is by far the most popular stilbenoid. It can be found in blueberries, peanut, and grape. And if you've ever heard that drinking a glass of wine a day can lead to future health benefits, it's because of this molecule here. The peanut produces many stilbenoids, including resveratrol, but what they also produce are prenylated stilbenoids. And as you can see here, these compounds have a very similar structure to resveratrol, but the one thing that differs is this prenyl group. And we hypothesize that this prenyl group can lead to higher bioavailability of these compounds. And what we do to produce these stilbenoids is we use hairy roots as a bioproductive system. What we do is we cut the leaf of a peanut plant and we inoculate it with a bacterium. And when we do that, it produces a disease of the plant known as the hairy root. And these hairy roots are what we use to elicit the stilbenoids. The hypothesis of this experiment was that stilbenoid-rich extracts from peanut hairy roots exhibit significant antioxidant activity. And to study this hypothesis, we are going to elicit the peanut hairy root cultures, extract the phytochemicals, analyze those extracts with HPLC, and assess the antioxidant activity with a combined DPPH-HPLC assay. To elicit the peanut hairy roots, we add the elicitors to 9-day-old peanut hairy roots and let them sit for 168 hours. And as you can see, after elicitation, there is a drastic color change, indicating that stilbenoids are present in the culture media. We extract the stilbenoid extract from this procedure. We use the DPPH assay to determine antioxidant activity. DPPH is a stable free radical, and this assay relies on the antioxidant's ability to reduce the DPPH, and the results are shown colorimetrically. So as you see, when this compound is reduced, a drastic color change occurs, and we can use this color change to calculate the percent inhibition of DPPH. This is the DPPH-HPLC assay of that extract. Now, as you can see, the profile that was treated with DPPH shows great inhibition by the arachidin compounds, but no inhibition by the resveratrol. And this is that previous chromatogram quantified. To determine why resveratrol was not inhibiting DPPH in the extract, we fractionated the resveratrol from the extract and performed a DPPH-HPLC of that fraction. And as you can see, when isolated, resveratrol readily inhibits DPPH. This indicates that the arachidin compounds and the other compounds are better antioxidants in the extract than resveratrol. The conclusions of this experiment are that the composition of the peanut hairy root extract influences the antioxidant activity. The DPPH-HPLC assay can screen for unknown antioxidants. The prenylated stilbenoids have higher antioxidant activity than resveratrol in the extract. The extracts have potential pharmaceutical value, and they also have potential value in the food and beverage industry as supplements. I would like to thank Dr. Fabricio Medina Bolivar for letting me work in his laboratory on this project, Patrick Roberto for being my mentor throughout this project, the rest of the Medina Bolivar Laboratory for their constant support, and I would like to thank the ABI Biotechnology Research Internship for funding this project.
And that was Emily Hendricks. Now we go to Rebecca Martin with her presentation titled Synthesis of New 2-Aminopyrimidines, Dr. John Hirschberger, Mentor.
With our current global situation, the development of new medicines to treat current and novel diseases is of the utmost importance. The list of underlying conditions that can make the COVID-19 virus lethal is long, and not all of those conditions are quickly treated. My research works to develop new molecules that may have relevant activities in developing new medicines through an efficient synthesis. The products utilize an organic compound found in many different types of existing drugs, called a 2-aminopyrimidine group. This structure is the basis of medicines that treat HIV, cancer, thrombosis, and many other diseases. A few of these can be seen under the medicinal 2-aminopyrimidines section, with the 2-aminopyrimidines group highlighted in red. The first step in the reaction scheme is the synthesis of a Biganelli compound using an aryl aldehyde, urea, and methylacetoacetate, as shown in Figure 1. The product can be varied depending on the aryl aldehyde used. For example, in my research, I used compounds with halide atoms, like bromine and chlorine, attached to the benzene ring in the aldehyde. These atoms appear in the Biganelli product and change some of its chemical and physical properties. The second step is the oxidation of the Biganelli product, as shown in Figure 2. In this reaction, 2 hydrogen atoms are removed from the compound, and the structure isomerizes to the alcohol conformation. This occurs because of its increased stability over the ketone conformation that is an intermediate in the reaction. The final step is an Ugi-Smiles reaction using the oxidized Biganelli product, seen in Figure 3. The other reagents are an aldehyde, a primary amine, and an isocyanide. The specific aldehyde and amine used can also vary the final product of this reaction that contains the desired 2-aminopyrimidine group. Aliphatic aldehydes were used after discovering that aromatic aldehydes did not allow the reaction to go to completion and create the desired product. All of the compounds I produced using this multi-step synthesis were structurally verified using nuclear magnetic resonance spectroscopy. One of the spectra created, and the product it represents, is shown in Figure 4. The purification and isolation of the products are still being completed using thin layer chromatography and column chromatography. Once these steps are completed for all of the compounds produced, biological testing, such as enzyme assays, will occur to determine their likelihood of being used in new pharmaceuticals. I would like to thank the Department of Chemistry and Physics and the College of Science and Mathematics at Arkansas State, as well as the FRAC, for their support of this work.
And now we go to Sankalpa Chakrabarty with his presentation, Aberrant Cardiac Long Non-Coding RNA Profile Following Altered Thyroid Hormone Levels, Dr. Viswanathan Rajagopalan, Mentor.
Cardiovascular disorders are number one killer not only in Arkansas and the entire United States, but also in the world overall. With 40% of the ongoing coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic patients dying with cardiovascular complications, our research becomes highly crucial and urgent in these unprecedented times. Abnormalities in thyroid hormones can adversely cause or contribute to cardiovascular diseases. Thyroid hormones are the master controller of the cardiovascular performance. There are two types of thyroid hormones, T3 and T4, both released from the thyroid gland. Dr. Raj Lab has published multiple papers showing beneficial effects of thyroid hormones in cardiovascular diseases. We are now on to discovering even some better therapeutics. Before going to the RNAs, the central dogma of biology states that DNA, which consists of innumerable genes, produces RNA, which in turn produces protein. But if we code all the proteins back to the DNA, it covers less than 5% of the total DNA size. So it becomes crucial to study the less explored non-coding regions. We call these RNAs non-coding RNAs. One such variety is called long non-coding RNAs, which are relatively new and emerging molecules to explore in cardiovascular biology, as evident in the picture. They comprise of at least 200 nucleotides, which in turn are the building blocks of DNA and RNA. Our hypothesis is that abnormal alterations in thyroid hormone levels will impair long non-coding RNA gene expression in the heart. The various techniques expanded here include gravimetry, ultrasound ECG scan of heart, as well as qPCR for long non-coding RNA expression and ELISA for thyroid hormone level, both of which are used to detect coronavirus COVID-19 patients. We also did exosome isolation and Western blotting, as well as statistical analysis. We first established hypothyroidism or low hormone levels and hyperthyroidism or high hormone levels in mice using excessive amounts of compounds called PTU and T4 respectively. This slide demonstrates that with hypothyroidism, the heart and its components reduced in size, and with hyperthyroidism, they increased in size. As is tested for all heart patients, including those with coronavirus COVID-19, hypothyroidism reduced heart function and decreased heart rates. Hyperthyroidism, on the contrary, showed opposite functionalities. Importantly, RNA purified from the heart tissues of these animals show that long non-coding RNAs are significantly impaired in both hypo and hyperthyroidism, especially in a differential and opposing manner. Since detection of long non-coding RNAs in blood can serve as an excellent diagnostic tool, we isolated exosomal vesicles, which are major carriers of the long non-coding RNAs in blood serum. As a proof of principle, I was successfully able to isolate and then confirm the enrichment of exosomes through Western blotting technique using CD63 antibody. In summary, this is the first work of its kind detecting heart-specific long non-coding RNAs following altered thyroid hormone levels. We strongly believe that these findings, along with the future expansion of exosomal studies, will enable us to discover novel diagnostic and therapeutic strategies for not only coronavirus COVID-19 patients, but also all patients with cardiovascular disorders. Following are the references that we have used for this presentation. We would like to acknowledge and thank Arkansas State University, Arkansas Biosciences Institute, and NYIT College of Osteopathic Medicine for their support.
And that was Sankalpa Chakrabarty. You're on the Created State podcast. As today we heard from students in the College of Sciences and Mathematics at Arkansas State. Well, don't forget to subscribe to the Created State podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast. Also, subscribe to the new KASU app. Make it so much easier for you to find the Created State podcast. It's available in the App Store and also Google Play. That's the new KASU app. Please tell others about the Created State podcast and leave us a 5-star review, as that'll really help get this podcast out to more ears. This is A-State Connections on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves.